There are plenty of incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act for the Biden administration's climate initiatives or for green energy. We've covered the biofuel incentives. Let's dive into some of the tax incentives that might be available on your farm.
Live from the forefront of the farm future via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk This Morning. We'll begin with Paul Niefer, the farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen. Then it's a chat with former USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yes, we've got a great reason to have a conversation with Bill Northey. I'm looking forward to it. Bill's new, shouldn't say new, he's been at it for a while, but his full-time gig now CEO of the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. So this is a great opportunity to get his views, not only as that former undersecretary at USDA, but also as the CEO of the Agribusiness Association of Iowa, get his views on some of the initiatives that are included in the Inflation Reduction Act. There is one that's kind of making the rounds right now, and it has to do with nutrient reduction and some of how it is phrased in the press release from USDA has raised some eyebrows, because evidently they've identified 89 million acres of cropland that exceed the nitrogen loss threshold. The coincidental, he says with a question mark. Part of this is how many acres of corn do we have planted in 2022? 89 million. So have they just looked at, have they just looked at the corn acres planted and said, you know what? That is cropland that exceeds the nitrogen loss threshold. I don't know if it's coincidental or not, but we'll talk more about that. And you know what? That may be more of a free-for-all for tomorrow with Wiesmeyer and Haney, you know, to kind of dive into that. But we'll talk with Bill about that as well, because it is very interesting. And
you can ask him about the Netherlands and about Canada's policies on
Dude, we can jump right in all over that.
I'm sure related stuff.
You bet. I bet Bill has been watching that situation very closely. And we are going to get an update on some EPA pesticide rules and regs from Bill.
Awesome.
Yes. Get
Lots
to the news.
To get to with Bill Northey.
Yeah.
The U.S. and Taiwan will begin formal talks on a trade and economic initiative. The first round of talks is set to take place early this fall, the Office of the U.S. Trade Rep said in a statement yesterday. The U.S. was Taiwan's third largest trading partner last year, according to the island's Trade Negotiations Office. China said Thursday following the announcement that it firmly opposes the initiative. What do you know? Yeah.
Well, okay, now this is not so much a deal, an issue of trying to deal with China through Taiwan. This is dealing directly with Taiwan. I get that. China, this is a case where you need to keep your nose out of it.
Well, shipping woes continue to plague the United States and other nations as West Coast ports struggle. Diverted shipments to East and Gulf Coast ports are building. In Europe, ports are backed up because dock workers are on strike or on vacation as ships line up. And there is an acute shortage of truck drivers there. Meanwhile, the major freight railroads signaled they're ready to negotiate a new labor contract based on a presidential report that calls for 24% raises. Chip, let me just jump on with this here as well. A summer of devastating droughts and extreme temperatures has sparked wildfires in Britain, brought ship traffic on parts of the Rhine to a standstill. Declining water levels have also hobbled hydroelectric plants in Norway and nuclear power plants in France. Southern China shipyards declared force majeure on some orders because of the impact of a searing heat wave on production. Dried up rivers, scorching heat, and power rationing in parts of China are disrupting factories and threatening crop yields, adding to the country's economic strain. China is firing silver iodide rods into clouds in hopes of spurring rainfall after a two-month heat wave pushed the Yangtze River to its lowest ever levels. Lots to unpack there.
There is. There is. And we could include in there the report that you had yesterday on the Colorado River having to reduce its the offtake from the Colorado River for all purposes, for public consumption and for agriculture. It's obviously we are dealing with some extreme weather conditions around the world.
Well, Federal Reserve officials remained upbeat on the state of the U.S. labor market, noting, quote, participants observed that the labor market remained strong, with the unemployment rate very low, job vacancies and quits close to historically high levels, and an elevated rate of nominal wage growth. Some committee members expect the unemployment rate to rise by the end of the year, according to FOMC meeting minutes.
That's about as mixed messages as you can get from a market. It really
is. I'm glad you said it, too, because I read that and was like, huh?
How do those things fit together? I get it. Yeah.
Well, a report from Fitch this week said that the Fed's interest rate moves had indeed made housing prices more likely to fall and put the largest plausible drop around 15%, less than earlier expected. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention admitted after an internal review it did not respond quickly enough to the spread of COVID. And finally, President Joe Biden won a temporary permission to once again pause energy leasing on federal lands and waters after a U.S. appeals court found a trial judge's order against the moratorium too vague to review, Chip.
Yeah, back on your previous item, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky saying that the agency made pretty dramatic, pretty public mistakes in its COVID-19 response. It's going to be interesting to see what the fallout is from that. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We were just talking about droughts in areas around the world. Greg, it's had a big impact on the cattle herd out there, hasn't it?
Absolutely, Chip. You know, Farm Bureau has got a new survey out that they conducted in June and July, basically studying the 17 states from Texas to North Dakota and those states west. They report that at least a third of those people are reducing the size of their herds or flocks. And I know you've followed this wicked drought for a while, but there's just some stunning information here. Like the average herd reduction in those 17 states is 36%.
Shocking.
So, it is. So last year they did this survey and they already reported that 67% of the respondents who reduced their herds last year, now nearly 50% were further reducing them this year. Another statistic that I just find absolutely crazy is 60% of these people, now this is the respondents, report they're hauling water to livestock. Chip, that's a miserable chore.
It is
when you have to do that. But these 17 states represent 74% of the nation's beef cattle. Yeah. So largest herd decline was in Texas, reported down 50% just from the response. Now that's obviously, you know, just the respondents here, but still it's overwhelming reduction to our herds and devastation to this industry.
You know, we need to talk very soon about forage availability too, Greg, because as I understand it, hay supplies out there are basically non-existent.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your cattle operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations. AgriTalk is brought to you by FBN, where for a limited time, new customers can save an extra 5% on AgSaver glyphosate. Visit fbn.com/direct. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us this morning. Davis Michelson is here as well.
Hello.
Davis, Greg got me so fired up.
I know
there,
you did.
I was going to talk right through the commercial. Mm-hmm. Oh, good grief. But the point being, though, the forage supplies in that drought area out west, so tight, very unbelievably tight, We've got some good forage supplies in the middle of the country, but when you look at the price of transport and everything now, yep. it's unbelievably expensive. Those calves, when they come off the cow this fall, I got to believe that there's going to be a chunk of them that are just going to go straight into the feed yard. There's going to be very little backgrounding on these calves done before they hit the feed yard. And if that cow is open, if she fails a preg check, she's going to be in the sale barn before you know what happened next. We're not done. We are not done. That is the bottom line, dealing with the drought and the impact on the cattle herd. Okay. The Inflation Reduction Act, lots of incentives. We covered it yesterday with Donnell Rehagen from the Clean Fuels Alliance on what it means for biofuels. There are other incentives in the IRA to promote the climate agenda, to promote clean green fuels. Let's talk about it right now. Paul Niefer, Farm CPA at CLA. Paul Niefer, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm actually with my wife visiting with her siblings up at a lake called Curlew Lake up toward the Canadian border in Washington State. So hopefully my cell phone service is good.
It sounds really good right now. Don't move. You know, maybe stick a hanger or something like that. Okay. Let's start with your latest update that you put out yesterday, and the title of it is USDA Doubles Down on Equipment Gains. What is this about?
Yeah, so, you know, the emergency relief program, there was a provision in there that allowed farmers to get an extra payment or extra payment limit if more than 75% of their adjusted gross income was from farming. Well, the equipment gains, because starting with the Tax Reform Act in 18, farmers started reporting a lot more equipment gains. But in order for those equipment gains to be considered farm income, their other farm income had to be at least two-thirds of total AGI, including those equipment gains. And for most farmers, they weren't going to be able to meet that provision. Now, we know that Senator Thune and Klobuchar and a couple other senators had issued a letter to FSA about 3 weeks ago saying, hey, you need to fix this. You need to allow equipment gains to be considered farm income. Well, USDA came out, I think, yesterday, or at least I saw the report. It might have been the day before, but I got the report yesterday, or their guidance indicating that they're still doubling down. In order for equipment gains to be considered farm income, you have to have two-thirds of other farm income more than total farm. So this is actually not great news for those farmers that have a lot of equipment gains and their other income is showing a negative. So that's essentially the way I said it. You know, yeah. USDA doubled down and kept their old provision.
Okay. So, and basically, if we would have seen it change and we could count the equipment gains. And when you say equipment gains, what you're talking about is rising value of equipment that they have in place right now, right?
No. Really, what we're saying is under the old rules, when you traded in farm equipment, you know, you traded your tractor for a new tractor.
Okay.
That was never considered to be a gain. Well, now with tax reform back in 2017, suddenly that became a gain. Even though nothing else changed, the farmer had to report gain over on one forms, and then over on their Schedule F, they had to take the deduction for depreciation. So that's what's happening, is their Schedule F is showing a loss. Their Form 4797 is showing a large amount of gain, but FSA is not letting that farmer count that gain, and so that's what the issue is. It isn't the fact that they're, you know, that they had appreciation in equipment. It's
okay.
Just the fact that they traded in their farm equipment. So it's just
okay.
One of those technicalities that FSA just, and I sort of knew it was going to happen, because we've already seen that phase one has already issued, what, $6.5 billion of payments, and their original budget for phase one was only $6 billion. So if they made this change, then that means farmers probably would get another $500 million or so on phase one. So that's why they made the change. Changes is what I'm thinking.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Let's talk about the Inflation Reduction Act. What does it mean for farmers? Bottom line at first.
Well, I think bottom line, there's certainly no major tax changes for farmers, which is good. The only really tax change that might affect some farmers, they extended the excess business loss rules for another 2 years. We've talked about that before. For most farmers, not going to be a big deal. Certainly on the incentive side, obviously you had discussions on the clean fuels and so on, but there is an incentive to possibly have a farmer that wants to buy some type of commercial, they call it clean vehicle. It isn't just electric vehicles. It could be hydrogen and so on, but there's an incentive that they could get up to 30% of the cost, up to $40,000 as a rebate or a credit on their income taxes. And then certainly if they want to put in a solar or methane digester or wind turbines, you're going to have all those credits, but it really maybe isn't that big of a deal. So I don't know if you want to dig into the fact that unless you use prevailing wages and an apprenticeship program, your credit's only 6%. And to me, that's not going to push a farmer to really want to do something if they're only going to get 6% credit.
Right. And explain to me this transfer of credits.
Yeah, so let's say that a dairy farmer puts in a methane digester and they qualify for $500,000 of credits. Now, their annual tax bill is only $50,000. So it might take them 10 or 15 years to soak up that credit. Well, what this transfer allows the farmer to do is they find somebody like Chip Flory that's got a large tax bill. We know Chip's got a very large tax bill, and he wants that $500,000 credit so he can offset his tax bill. So he goes to the farmer and says, hey, I'll buy that $500,000 credit for, let's say, $400,000, and then uses it to offset $500,000 of taxes. So the farmer wins in that they get that credit, and it's tax-free. That's the nice benefit, too. It's tax-free. Now, the person buying the credit can't deduct it, but they get to use it to offset their taxes. So this is the first time, really, that they've ever allowed federal tax credits to be transferred or sold, essentially. State's been allowing you to do this, but this is the first time that the IRS is going to be allowed to do it.
Seems like a major change.
It's a very major change because, like I say, a lot of farmers have this unique ability to not generate a lot of tax liability. Well, a large credit really does them no good if they got to wait 10 or 15 years. Now they get to monetize it immediately. Plus, like when you go, let's say Chip is a consumer and wants to go buy that new Ford F-150 Lightning pickup for $80,000. Well, that $7,500 credit, maybe you got to wait till you file your tax return, you don't have enough taxable income, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this new bill allows the dealership automatically sort of give you that credit when you buy the Ford pickup, so you're going to reduce your purchase price by $7,500 immediately. So that's a good provision too.
Don't have to wait for it. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
And that's
right.
But that's it if you can get the credit, because there's some restrictions on what vehicles are going to qualify there.
Yeah. I think realistically. If you want to buy, if you can buy that, let's say, and I'm not touting Ford F-150 Lightning, but if you want to buy it, you better buy it this year because you're going to qualify for the current $7,500 credit. Whereas next year, you may not qualify for it because you don't have the correct battery components. You don't have the correct mineral components, because right now, what is it? 90% of that's coming from China, and that's not going to be allowed starting next year, essentially.
Right. Yeah. There's not many of the vehicles are going to qualify at that point. Good grief. 30 seconds.
Right.
Anything on the health care?
Yeah, the health care is a nice benefit for people like my age. I'm not quite to Medicare age, but I'm getting closer. There's a couple of key features. Your maximum out-of-pocket for Medicare is going to be, for drugs, is going to be $2,000. For those farmers, and there's a lot of farmers that are on the ACA at Medicare, or not Medicare, but the health exchange, those beneficial changes that were applied for this year, they've now extended it for 3 more years. So 23, 24, and 25, you're not going to have that 400% of federal poverty level cliff, and et cetera, et cetera. So those changes are actually very beneficial for most farmers that are on the exchange.
Good stuff, Paul. Hey, thanks for taking time away from your vacation to join us. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah. That's okay. My appreciates that I went outside. So
all right. That's Paul Niefer, Farm CPA at CLA. Bill Northey next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, this wheat market, we have fallen through and traded to new lows for the year, and we're back to last fall's levels. This is a pretty remarkable move to the downside.
Yeah, quite a sharp sell-off here, not only today, Chip, but like you mentioned, just a continuation of this this price pattern that we've seen. We paused for multiple weeks, but now it looks like a downside breakout, and you know, the dollar is stronger. We're just not exporting much wheat. New marketing year low for the weekly total that was out this morning, and just, you know, rough go of things on the demand side of things for U.S. wheat. And really leading to the selling pressure here this morning.
Okay, well, what's got corn and soybeans trading to the upside?
Well, while the weekly export export sales were poor for wheat, they were strong for both corn and soybeans. So we saw some value buying come under the market, primarily from China, and the 1.3 million tons of new crop sales that we saw for the week were the highest for either of the old crop or new crop marketing years since the end of March. So that's putting a charge into the soybean market. The corn export sales were also stronger than anticipated, and that's helping fuel buying in that market, along with the strength that we're seeing in meal this morning.
Okay, quick, give us an update on what's happening in livestock.
Well, it's a sell-off in the hog market, so technical-based selling there. You know, concerns that the cash market's putting in a seasonal top, and as it should. But boy, the futures are well below where the cash index is trading right now, and just overly pessimistic. Feeder cattle are being pressured by the strength in corn, and that's weighing on live cattle.
Gotcha. Thanks, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Great conversation there with Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen. I'm your host, Chip Laurie. Glad that you're with us here this morning. Davis Michelson is standing by. And I'll bet ready to jump into a conversation with Bill Northey, former USDA Undersecretary and the current CEO of the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. Bill, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
Hey, Chip. Great to be with you. I'm glad to share with you and your listeners.
Excellent. 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 Okay, so big news yesterday for the Agribusiness Association of Iowa and the Iowa Nutrient Research and Education Council. Tell us about that.
It is. So that Iowa Nutrient Research and Education Council, called INREC, of course, everything has to have an acronym, right? Is really kind of the arm that we use to measure some of the practices that are going on in Iowa, like how many acres of cover crops are out there, what the farmers are using for nitrogen rates across their fields, and it's expanding into some other things as well. But received a grant from Google for $250,000 to continue our work. INREC is made up of Agribusiness Association, but Iowa Corn, Iowa Pork, Iowa Farm Bureau, just a really good crew of folks that are come together to help make sure that we're doing a measuring part of what's happening. Yeah. And now we're also looking at some nitrogen rate studies that would help us understand how to improve nitrogen management for Iowa farmers.
Gotcha. Bill, this is something that has been way, way, way up your priority list for many, many years, going back to even before you were Secretary of Ag here in Iowa. How are we doing? How are Iowa farmers doing in this effort to reduce runoff?
You know, a lot of work going on, good stuff. In fact, if you look at the phosphorus numbers from what the original goal was, We're seeing a significant reduction in the phosphorus that farmers see leaving their fields. As you look at all the conservation practices that are out there, the change from 30 years ago is tremendous. Yeah. We still struggle with the nitrogen numbers, and that's why we're looking at better nitrogen rates, many of the on-farm practices. We've seen cover crops grow in Iowa, so the nutrient reduction strategy started just not quite 10 years ago in Iowa. And at that time, we had, maybe less than 20,000 acres of cover crops in Iowa. Now we're around 3 million acres of cover crops. Still a lot of acres that we'd like to see it grow into, be used on more of those acres out there, but tremendous growth over that period of time. So a lot of activity, both in field, like cover crops or nitrogen rates or split nitrogen applications, but also edge of field in nutrient reduction wetlands, yes, and bioreactor saturated buffers.
Yeah. Yeah. The CREP wetlands that are out there, yes, Bill, what a fabulous way of reducing runoff.
Isn't it though? So for those that are not familiar, CREP wetlands, you take a tile line, and sometimes that tile line will have nitrogen levels in it a little higher than what streams are, and you can run, yep, it through a CREP wetland, a nutrient reduction wetland, and coming out of that wetland, you'll see often more than a 50% reduction, sometimes 70%, yep, reduction in the amount of nitrogen that then goes into a drainage ditch or a river or other kinds of things. So great practice.
Yep. Yep. I was actually at one just the other day, Bill. You're going to love hearing this. It had 100%. It went from 20 parts per million to,
wow,
zero coming out the,
wow,
other end.
Super. Super.
Yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. It works.
Yes.
It works. We need to see more of it. Okay. U.S. Department of Agriculture welcomed the Inflation Reduction Act. It's got $19.5 billion in conservation funding. One of the climate initiatives in the IRA, USDA estimates 89 million acres of cropland exceed the nitrogen loss threshold. It's raised the eyebrows of many producers out there. It talks about producers working with the NRC staff to develop a nutrient management plan. Number one, aren't producers already working with NRCS on nutrient management plans?
They are. They're obviously working as well with a retailer and anybody else that,
yeah,
is providing nitrogen. So there is a lot of work going on. Nitrogen is a challenging nutrient to manage, mm-hmm, because in some years you have more nitrogen mineralization off your organic matter than other years. And so that's one of the reasons we're looking at a nitrogen initiative here, to understand how to better model that and help producers make better decisions. But I think an awful lot of folks are trying to get the right number. In fact, when nitrogen gets expensive as it was this year,
yeah,
definitely nobody's trying to put on more than they need. They're just,
exactly,
trying to use the bare minimum.
Exactly. The concern that I'm picking up is that this might suggest that there's going to be mandates on usage levels. Do you think that's a risk?
I guess any regulatory kind of scheme is probably a risk, but yeah, I would think that it's a small risk because, you know, one of the things I learned at USDA and in putting out some programs, we did some trade relief and coronavirus relief, other kinds of things. Ideas are easy. Implementation is tough. So how would you implement that? How would you say what the rate should be everywhere? Frankly, in some years, if I've got a 5% organic matter soil, it may release 250 pounds of nitrogen to grow,
yeah,
that crop. And I don't need a lot more than that to be able to grow the crop. But some years it releases less than 100 pounds.
Right.
And so what's that regulated rate? And do they look at all the things? And then what's the penalty for it? How do you carry it out?
Right.
Just think it'd be really tough. besides, it'd be inefficient thing for the government to try and manage when the farmer wants the same thing, not use any more than you need, and they want to grow a good crop.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Can we talk about the meeting that you had yesterday with some of the EPA leaders?
You bet. Glad to. We had folks from the pesticide area of EPA that were out here that both political and career employees there, as well as Rod Snyder, who's the ag advisor to the administrator. They were all out of headquarters. And then a couple of folks from the Region 7 office, which is the office that works with Iowa here. And so we went out to an ag retail site, a New Century Co-op up at Melbourne, Iowa. Great site. We had folks that walked through that site to be able to show them modern day precision agriculture, the investment that it takes for a retail site to be able to contain pesticides, to manage pesticides the right way, to help farmers control weeds out there. And it was a good session. Several different topics came up. Certainly one of those is atrazine.
Yeah.
And the concern about the proposed levels of reduction, what's called the level of concern that EPA would share. And that's how much atrazine could appear in water. And their model would say a lot more than what the ag folks think is going to appear. But they have reduced that level from what it's been in the past in a way that would require probably a lower limit in the amount of atrazine that could be used, and certainly a more complexity in the way that you show your compliance, a list of some conservation practices that you'd have to share, that if you're going to use a certain amount, you have to share what conservation practice you're doing that therefore would allow you to use as much as maybe generally not as much as what we've been able to use in the past.
So one way or another, they're going to reduce the amount of atrazine that we're using, even though it's been the most tested and proven one of the safest herbicides that we can use.
Yeah, I really can't imagine that the end would not be a reduction. And as you say, it actually is used in so many products at often very low levels. So I think there's over 90 different products that have a little bit of atrazine in them that make the product work better, that adds more weeds to the control list of that product.
Yep.
We have very few producers that are applying only atrazine at a full rate. They typically are using it with other products and making those products better. And if we were to lose that, I've talked to some of our retailers that said if we were to lose that, we would see more tillage going on because that's what's remaining to be able to control some weeds.
Absolutely.
EPA assures us that's not what they're after. They're not after more tillage. But certainly farmers need choices. And if some of the choices are taken off the table, that's a real worry to our farmers and our retailers.
Bill, do they understand that could be an unintended consequence of their actions?
I think they do. I think they're hearing it. And we're in a comment period right now, so it's certainly available for folks to comment on until October 7th.
Absolutely. Get the comments done. Bill, it was great talking with you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Chip. Thank you.
You bet. Bill Northey, CEO, Agribusiness Association of Iowa.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us here this morning. Really good conversation there with Bill Northey. I want to get to some of the highlights. But first, Davis, remember, you know, I might have talked about a couple of times or 10 about showing in the Governor's Steer Show last weekend.
See, you might have mentioned that. Yeah.
Well, I did my best to connect animal agriculture to the corn growers in the state, to the feed makers and everything, because when I talked about the steer that I was showing, Chad, I called him 1,485 pounds of Iowa corn-fed beef. Got quite a response from the crowd down there when I said that. So with that in mind, let's make time for this industry spotlight. Joining me now is Troy Schneider, Colorado farmer and chair of the NCGA Market Development Action Team. Troy, tell me about the key partnerships that you have with the animal ag industry.
Well, Chip, the animal ag industry is our largest customer, making up roughly 38% of the demand of our corn. NCGA works closely with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on promoting the value of corn-fed beef through series like the Cattlemen Education and their NCBA show, Cattlemen to Cattlemen, on RFD TV. We also partner with the National Pork Board on various incentives, like funding to update the swine nutrient guidelines. And don't forget the poultry industry, in where we are members of the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Poultry and Eggs.
All right. And it brings a lot of value to corn. Talk to me about the value that these industries do bring to corn producers.
The value that these three industries bring to our corn, one out of every four bushels of added corn demand is due to red meat exports in 2021. Beef and pork exports accounted for 537 million bushels of corn usage. And poultry exports alone added 28 cents per bushel to the value of corn. And, you know, in eastern Colorado, we're very lightly populated, and it means jobs. When we see corn going to the feedlot and our corn and the beef put people to work, and that's what it's all about.
That's fantastic, Troy. Where can we go to learn more about these partnerships?
To learn more about NCGA's initiatives and partnerships with animal ag industry, go to ncga.com to learn more.
It's so important. And like you said at the very beginning, Troy, animal ag is the biggest consumer of corn here in the United States. It's something that we need to take note of and honor that partnership that's out there. Thank you so much. That is Troy Schneider, Colorado farmer and chair of the NCGA Market Development Action Team.
All righty then. We are back. Davis Michelson here. Chip Flory. Fantastic conversations today. Paul Niefer from CLA, Clifton Larson Allen, and of course, former undersecretary, former ag secretary of the great state of Iowa, Bill Northey. He had an interesting quote here that I wrote in my notes. You were asking him about the potential for a regulatory approach to nitrogen management on the farm. The quote was, "Ideas are easy, implementation is tough." That's something that we're seeing across. You want to talk about ideas are easy, implementation is tough. How about we're going to make everything green and put the fossil fuels industry out of business? Okay.
Right.
Cleaner stuff is a great idea. How are you going to implement that?
Exactly. Well, the way that you're going to do it is you're going to incentivize people to buy that electric vehicle, but then you're going to put restrictions on what can be in that electric vehicle. Okay. You know, no more of these rare earth metals or minerals from China in the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going to get it? I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
I don't think they have an answer for that.
No,
they are asking, incentivizing, and in some cases, mandating something that can't be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable, dude.
Well, and when Niefer was talking about, if you want to get this done, you better go ahead and buy one this year before these restrictions against China take place. Oh, I mean, okay, but what happens, you know, in 2 years when I needed new battery for the sucker? And I can't get it because there's a rare earth embargo or... Now what do I do?
Exactly. Yeah. It's
I borrow my neighbor's gasoline powered truck.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you picked out maybe the most important thing that he said. Well, it might be the second most important thing that Bill said, because the most important thing that Bill said was, I don't see a way that we're not going to get that we're not going to see some sort of a reduction in the amount of atrazine that is used in the products out there. 90-plus products have some atrazine in it that allow that product to be more efficient, to do a better job of what it is intended to do, and they're going to take it away from us. And in some cases, many cases, it's going to put steel back in the dirt to control weeds. I sure hope that everybody is taking advantage of the opportunity to submit a comment to EPA on their proposed changes to atrazine use, because it needs to be known that there are going to be consequences, and these consequences are going to carry less desirable results than what we've got right now.
Yep.
If they make this decision and push forward, everybody needs to chime in on this. Everybody.
Yep. Yep.
And what if we would see some sort of a regulation on the amount of nitrogen? Like you said, I think that comment about ideas are easy, implementation is tough. I think that is. I don't know if it prevents an effort to regulate nitrogen use.
Well,
but boy, it's a headwind and a barrier.
And the thing is, he also pointed out, look, the farmer's not putting on any extra nitrogen right now.
Right.
You know, nobody wants to spend more on fertilizer than they have to.
Let's figure out how to capture it. If it does escape, let's figure out how to do that. Wow. Great show today. Paul, thank you. Appreciate it. Bill, thank you. Davis, thank you. Big Apple Joe, thank you. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Pete Meyer, S&P Global Market Intelligence, right here on AgriTalk.